This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Lost in the general election hubbub was a piece of news that ordinarily might have made some pretty big waves in Vermont. Entergy Corporation has announced plans to sell the Vermont Yankee nuclear power plant to a company that specializes in demolition, hazardous material removal, and site remediation. Selling, though, might be a generous word. North Star Group would not exactly be paying top dollar for the shutdown plant, and it would assume all the costs of decommissioning. Still, presumably, the company thinks it could make a profit. So what is the business model here, and what does it mean for Vernon and surrounding communities? Here to talk about the ins and outs of the deal is Mike Fayer. He writes for VT Digger and for the Brattleboro-based weekly newspaper, The Commons. Mike, it's nice to have you on the program.
Nice to be here, Jane.
What is the business model of buying a defunct nuclear power plant?
Well, you have to remember that there's a decommissioning trust fund to pay for this work. And so I guess you could think of it as you would a contractor. A contractor sets a price for doing a job, and built into that price is a profit. And so North Star would be using the decommissioning trust fund and presumably being able to take some administrative cost out of there and, you know, turn a profit.
So you get the decommissioning funds when you buy this plant, and if you can do it cheaply enough, you get to keep the extra money in the fund. That's the basic model here, is if you can do it cheap, you get what's left over.
Sure.
And when I say they didn't really pay top dollar, it sounds from your reporting like the price tag was about $1,000. It was sort of, hey, you know, any of us could have bought a nuclear power plant, you know, with $1,000 lying around.
Yeah, I guess if you'd want one. There is that nominal cash outlay at the outset. There's also another piece, though. So Entergy is paying for spent fuel storage with a $143 million line of credit. And when this sale goes through, North Star assumes that liability. So there is a cost involved.
We're talking about Entergy Vermont Yankee right now, which may soon not be Entergy-owned if North Star Group is approved for purchase. You can call with your questions about this sale, this idea, if you live in southern Vermont. What does this mean to you? Are you looking forward to the possibility of an earlier decommissioning? Our number is 1-800-639-2211. Again, that's 1-800-639-2211. Or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. We got a note from Grav22 who says, my question concerns where the payment goes once the sale is complete. Since the decommissioning fund is underfunded, it seems to me that any payment to Vermont Yankee should go to building up the fund rather than lining their pockets. So, Mike, we already discussed that there's not really a lot of payment here for Vermont Yankee, but what about that question of the underfunded decommissioning fund? If North Star thinks it can get this done quickly, wasn't the whole point to build up the decommissioning fund over a number of decades so that it was big enough to cover the costs?
Yeah, I mean, that's really a key question here. There's long been speculation that the $1.24 billion projection for decommissioning Vermont Yankee is way high. So we don't know at this point what North Star thinks it can do this project for. There's another aspect to this sale that I haven't been able to fully explore, and that is there's apparently an agreed upon level at which where the trust fund has to be when this sale closes. And if it's not there, Entergy has to make up the difference. Now, I've asked preliminarily what that number is, and I haven't been able to get an answer yet. I think we'll see that when the paperwork is filed with the Public Service Board before the end of the year. So we can't assume that where the trust fund is at now, which is at about $575 million, is where it will be at the time of the sale. And remember, that trust fund is not it simply is going to be passed over to North Star. And it's not a fund that Entergy ever put a dime into. It's mm-hmm. the Vermont ratepayers' money.
So $575 million, just shy of that, was the last word we got on how much is in that decommissioning fund.
Right.
And this sale, should it all go according to plan, would be completed around 2018, right? So there's a presumption that there might be a little bit more money in there. But just to recap here, Entergy would have to make up the difference of whatever that decided number is of how much needs to be in there.
Yeah, well, they will, unless the market performs in such a way that it, you know, the investment proceeds make up the difference. And right now the projection is that if the market returns are 5.5% annually, which admittedly seems pretty high, that they believe the trust fund will get to that level that it needs to be at when the sale closes. If the market doesn't perform in that way, then Entergy will have to make up that difference.
This is North Star's business. Hazardous cleanup, remediation is what they do. But given that Entergy is in the business of running nuclear power plants and had said this was going to cost north of $1 billion, you'd think that Entergy would be fairly efficient in taking down a nuclear plant. How can North Star do it better and make a profit?
Well, I wrote a story just the other day, a sort of follow-up to the sales story, where it talked about a contractor taking over a plant in Zion, Illinois. And they're doing exactly this. They believe that they could come in and do it more cheaply, and apparently they're succeeding 5 or 6 years in. I should note that North Star has three corporate partners here, and two of those partners, at least two of them, have very extensive nuclear experience. And a key thing here is that one of those partners, called Waste Control Specialist out of Texas, has its own radiological waste site. So one would presume that they can take the waste from Vermont Yankee directly to their own disposal site, whereas Entergy would have had to pay somebody to take that off their hands.
We're talking today about the potential sale of Vermont Yankee Nuclear Power Plant. This news came out last week when most people were paying attention to the election. If you have a question about the details of the proposal or you want to share your thoughts, our number is 1-800-639-2211. Let's go to Guy, who's calling in from Berlin. Hi, Guy. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. And I've got to say, I sort of follow this issue, and you got the right person on. Mike Payer's done a really good job reporting on this and sort of in depth and very fairly.
Hear, hear.
Thanks.
So I've got a question. Actually, I've got three, and I'll ask them simply and just sort of hang up and listen to the answers, if that's okay. One is, what would be the economic benefits to Vernon and to the surrounding area of finishing the job in, say, I don't know, 15 or 20 years instead of the, you know, possibly 60 years out under the old model? And also, my understanding is that if North Star owns the plant, there's no longer this extra layer of oversight that Entergy would have to do, overseeing the work of its contractor, basically. So that there's some significant money savings because of that. And is that Mike's understanding also? The last thing is that my understanding is that when the job is all over, if there is any money left over in the decommissioning fund, 55% of that goes back to the ratepayers. Is that accurate? At the beginning of the show, I heard something that suggests that perhaps it's not. But if you can just sort of fill me in on if there's money left over, where does that money go?
Guy, thanks for the questions. Mike, table that question about the communities surrounding the plant for now, because we'll talk about that in a little while. But to Guy's questions about does this remove oversight and what about that decommissioning fund money if there's excess, you know, Guy's understanding that some of it goes back to the ratepayers.
Well, as far as oversight goes, you know, the oversight here would be via the NRC. Entergy would be out of the loop completely. You know, they would have no ownership of the site. But I don't know that there's any difference between the way that the NRC would oversee Entergy doing decommissioning versus North Star doing decommissioning, if I understood the question correctly. So I'm not sure that I see any potential cost savings for North Star in that regard. They'll have to go through the same policies and procedures that Entergy would. That's a good question on the trust fund. I didn't mean to imply at the outset that somehow that every last dime would be scooped up by North Star as a profit. I think what I meant to say was that North Star is going to project that they can do this job for X amount of dollars when, in fact, there's Y amount of dollars in the trust fund, and that somewhere in that equation there's a profit built in. As an example, the company that's doing the Zion decommissioning in Illinois initially projected that they could make $200 million from that job. Now, I think that's been downgraded since then. Now, yes, the trust fund, under Entergy's management, he is correct that a little over half was to come back to Vermont at the end of the job, presuming there was any left over. The question was always, was there going to be any money left over?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a really theoretical thing. I would imagine that provision stays in place. But who can say, even between now and 2030, whether there'll be any money left over?
Well, and that seems like the real risky part of this proposition for North Star, although, you know, that's the model that they're in, and they certainly would know that. But that question of, you know, in difference from being a contractor is, you know, if you're a contractor, you set your price and you say, here's what you're going to pay me for this site cleanup. And then the company that owns the plant has to pay you for the site cleanup. If you own the plant and it winds up costing you a lot more than you thought you could do it for, you're on the hook for that money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The counter argument there would be there's a lot less risk in North Star owning the plant and getting the decommissioning done over the next 14 years, as opposed to Entergy owning the plant and not getting decommissioning done until 2075, that there's a lot more variables in play there, and presumably less risk.
And just to recap here, North Star is saying that if this deal goes through, it would start the cleanup in 2021 and end by 2030, when the safe store process that Entergy was planning to use could allow it to take up to 60 years before decommissioning. So this is a pretty significant change in the proposed timeline for decommissioning. Let's bring another voice in here. Raymond Chattis is Senior Technical Advisor for the New England Coalition on Nuclear Pollution, and he's on the line with us now. Hi, Ray. Nice to have you back.
Hey, good afternoon.
What's your reaction to this idea of Entergy selling to North Star?
Well, this kind of sale is going on around the country at various nuclear plants, so it's not unique. And it is in line with what New England Coalition had been recommending at the Vermont Public Service Board. The $1.24 billion price tag seemed to us to be extraordinary. It was brought forward by Entergy very late in the game when it came to their relicensing. Prior to that, they had been down in the $600 to $700 million range. And as part of an agreement with the state, they were required to come up with fresh estimates on decommissioning. And to everyone's surprise, they came back with $1.24 billion.
So it seems like then this sale, should it go through, with North Star saying we can do it cheaper and faster, more along the lines of what you had been calling for or saying you thought it could be done for in the first place, would be a good thing. Is this sale, in your opinion, a good thing?
Yeah, to the extent that there is less risk in a prompt decommissioning, there is less risk to the workers and to the environment to get on with it early in the game. For one thing, you have within the employees at the plant, you have people who were worked on it when it was being built, who have followed it through its years of operation, and they have personal knowledge of how it was constructed, where there might be radiological contamination lurking, and so on. So it's good to have their expertise. If you wait for the safe store period to expire, you're apt not to have that that input. So it's good. The criteria here of timeliness and speed are one thing, but it is altogether more important to assure that it's the best possible cleanup done to the very highest standards.
Do you have any reason to suspect that North Star might not do it to the highest standards?
Well, Entergy was proposing to clean up Vermont Yankee to federal standards. the federal standards allow 2.5 times more radiological contamination to remain on site than is the case for Maine Yankee, Connecticut Yankee, and Yankee Row. So it's a question of do we want good enough, federal good enough standards, or do we want more stringent standards like those that were accorded to the people of Maine, Massachusetts, and Connecticut?
So it sounds like your concerns or frustrations are less with the possibility of a sale or Vermont Yankee changing hands and more with what might happen with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. You'd like them to take some basically stricter action here.
No, no. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission is immovable. Their standards are what they are. The function of a better cleanup standard belongs to the company itself in cooperation with the community and the state.
How would you try to push that forward to make that happen?
Well, we need to get into a dialogue with the new owners. Entergy retreated behind a agreement they signed with the state of Vermont, essentially giving them carte blanche. This was done during the relicensing proceedings, and they have been intractable. They have not done outreach to get significant community input. They have not made any moves to properly inform the community of what the concerns of decommissioning might be and to ask their input. Hopefully the new owners will be more enlightened. The only option we have really is to put public pressure on them, moral pressure on them, to provide an opportunity for community and stakeholder input.
Raymond Shattis is Senior Technical Advisor for the New England Coalition on Nuclear Pollution. Ray, thanks for talking with us today.
Oh, you're welcome.
We are talking about the potential sale of Vermont Yankee by Entergy Corporation to a company called North Star. And we're talking with Mike Fayer, who writes for VT Digger and for The Commons and who has done a lot of reporting on this issue and on Vermont Yankee. Mike, have you heard anything from North Star that might suggest it would be willing to basically do more or have a higher standard for remediation?
Well, you know, the interesting thing here is that Entergy in 2013 signed a shutdown settlement agreement with the state. And in that agreement, they said that there would be site restoration standards necessary to support the use of the property without limitation, which seems, I mean, to me, it sounds pretty stringent.
You could build apartments on it? I mean, without limitation, I mean, that's not realistic, but without limitation, meaning you could basically do whatever you want with that site once it's done.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I would read it as a layperson.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, in their statement about the sale, they said that they would seek, before the Public Service Board, in approval for the sale, they would seek, quote, standards that are generally consistent with those of other regional decommissioning projects, which sounds to me a little different. And when I ask Entergy about that, they acknowledge that you know, there is a difference there. It's subject to interpretation, and it might be up to the Public Service Board to figure that out.
More on this to come. We're going to talk about what the reaction has been like in the community, and we're going to hear from the Commissioner of the Public Service Department as we talk about the potential sale of Vermont Yankee by Entergy Corporation to a company called North Star. If you have a question about the sale, our number is 1-800-639-2211. You can also post your comments on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Could Vermont Yankee be decommissioned faster, cheaper, and more efficiently if it was done by North Star instead of Entergy? What are the potential downsides? We're taking a look at those questions today with VT Digger's Mike Fayer, who also writes for the Brattleboro-based paper The Commons. Listeners, what are you hearing or wondering about? You can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211 to share your thoughts with us, or post them on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Chris Recchia is Commissioner of Vermont's Department of Public Service, and he's on the line with us now. Hello, Commissioner. Nice to talk with you.
Hi, Jane. Hi, Mike. How are you guys doing?
Well, thanks.
Good.
I'm curious about your initial reaction to the idea of Entergy selling Vermont Yankee to North Star.
Well, I think you said it well at the top of the hour when you said cautiously optimistic. I think that's where we are. Obviously, Entergy doesn't want to be in the decommissioning business, and there's an opportunity for a company like North Star to establish itself for the upcoming decommissioning of plants. This would be one of the first, not the first, but it would be one of the first. And, you know, I'm cautiously optimistic that they would be able to do the work in the time frame that they're talking about. And, you know, I assume they want to do a good job so they can move on to other sites. I think the main issue, and Mike said it, you know, this will be before the Public Service Board, the main issue will be whether North Star is technically and financially capable of doing the work that needs to be done.
So that's pretty much the only question that the Public Service Board is going to need to answer in order to give its approval for this sale is, can North Star do this based on what their finances and their technical capabilities are?
I think that's right, although I think also kind of separately, but it's going to be inextricably linked with this, is what Mike said about the site restoration standards. Those will also need to be decided by the board, and we'll need to make sure that that those are, as Ray was pointing out, you know, very, very stringent and enable the site to be used for any purpose.
What ability does the PSB, the Public Service Board, have to address that question beyond the standards set by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission?
Right. So we have no authority, and the Public Service Board has no authority over the radiological aspects of the site. But after that, for site restoration, it's entirely within the Public Service Board's jurisdiction.
When might a decision come from the PSB?
I would imagine this is going to take about a year. I understand that that Entergy and North Star are planning on filing before the end of this year to transfer the license with the NRC and also to transfer the ownership with the public through the Public Service Board. Both are required. So I would expect that it will take about a year to go through that process.
If the federal government can't come up with a location for long-term nuclear waste storage, might it be unhelpful to have North Star complete the rest of the decommissioning process early, or is this ability for it to send some of the waste to Texas a way to get that full site remediation?
Right. So there are two different types of waste here. One is the low-level radioactive waste that can go to the WCS facility in Texas, which, by the way, is the same facility that we, you know, we're in the Texas Compact with, so that is an advantage. Vermont's waste is expected to go there. And then you've got the fuel rods that are going to be in dry cask storage that will have to remain on the site until the federal government has either an interim storage facility approved or a permanent storage facility. Now, the other interesting thing is that WCS has applied to the federal government to do an interim storage of the high-level radioactive waste in a site immediately adjacent to their low-level radioactive waste site. So there's a potential that the fuel could be moved. And I think to answer your question about is it advantageous or disadvantageous to do the work sooner, I think it's advantageous in the sense that the priority for moving the spent fuel rods will be for those that are sites that are cleaned up. So that'll be the first priority, and Vermont would then be in the queue to move that waste.
Mike Fayer, do you have any questions for Commissioner Recchia before I let him go?
No, I don't think so.
All right, perfect. Why not, you know, if you get another reporter on the show, you might as well give him a chance.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Chris Recchia is Commissioner of Vermont's Department of Public Service. Thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
Our number, listeners, if you have a question for Mike Fair or if you'd like to share your thoughts about this proposed sale and what it might mean for Vernon, for Vermont, for the site, is 1-800-639-2211. Or continue the conversation online on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Let's go to Terry, who's calling in from Montpelier. Hi, Terry. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I got a few questions here. I'm concerned about the safe transportation of nuclear waste in general, whether North Star purchases Yankee or not. If they do, and they're just like the guy was just saying, that we're in conjunction with this site in Texas, that's presumably a lot of nuclear low-level and or otherwise waste going across the country, either by train or by truck. How many tons, or if we're talking tons of low-level radioactive waste, would be going from Yankee to this site in Texas? You know, is that like one truckload or is it 20 rail cars full? And isn't this also a national security question for safely transporting nuclear waste? Isn't it like essentially a dirty bomb that a terrorist could attack? Thanks for taking my calls, and I'll take it off the air. Thank you.
Terry, thanks for the call, particularly that idea of potentially high-level nuclear waste being stored adjacent to that facility. Mike Fair, what have you found so far?
Well, I would say to start that to some degree this is already happening. The water that Entergy has been dealing with in its turbine building, the groundwater, is considered low-level radioactive waste. It's got tritium in it. And they've been shipping that off-site via truck since, I believe, sometime in the spring. And you know, that's happening via, you know, a contractor they hired. You know, I know that there is some oversight federally for that, but you wouldn't even know those trucks are rolling because apparently they're not placarded. There's no need for that given the low level of radioactivity. As far as the tonnage of low-level radioactive waste at the plant, I wouldn't even want to hazard a guess. A lot. I mean, I think they've been sending, just when you think of it in terms of the water that they're shipping, there have been several truckloads a week for months at a time. So you can imagine when you're talking about tearing down buildings and everything that goes into that, we're talking about a lot of shipments there. Now, the high-level waste, this, you know, the spent fuel, when it's time for that to go, assuming the federal government has a place to take it, that's regulated by the Department of Energy, U.S. Department of Energy. And they've already been on site surveying the site to try to figure out, you know, what's the best way to do this. And they've determined that rail will be the way that they do it. There won't be truck shipments. You know, it's supposed to be special rail cars, high security, all that stuff. But when they start doing that, as the commissioner noted, you know, we're not sure because they don't have a place to take it yet.
But it would be on rail, which presumably, you know, those routes would be known. I mean, Terry's not the only one who's asked a question about, is this something that could be a potential for terrorism? It's certainly been asked about decommissioned sites as well with dry cask storage on site. You know, is this a potential target?
Well, sure. I mean, anything's a potential target when you get right down to it. The makers of these dry casks where the fuel will be stored at Vermont Yankee for, you know, decades to come, they say that those casks have been tested, you know, to withstand the impact of a jet airplane, and, you know, all sorts of natural disasters and fires. But, you know, everything's relative, and yeah, sure, everything's a target.
We got a note from Kate O'Connor, chair of the Vermont Nuclear Decommissioning Citizens Advisory Panel, who wrote to us to say, listeners might like to know that representatives from Entergy and North Star will be attending the December 1 meeting of the Vermont Nuclear Decommissioning Citizens Advisory Panel to talk about the details for the proposed sale. The meeting will be from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Brattleboro Area Middle School in Brattleboro. It'll be the first time the principals of both companies talk about the plan, and it should be a valuable forum for the public to learn more about the future of Vermont Yankee. That meeting is open to the public, and she says we encourage anyone interested to attend. Let's get to Diane, who's with us from Heartland. Hi, Diane. What are you thinking about?
Hello.
Hi.
Jane?
Yes.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question it has been somewhat answered by your previous speakers. What I was wondering is where exactly in Texas is this area that North Star owns for disposing of waste, and how close are their residents to this area? We don't want to send our waste to Texas where there could be harmful effects on other citizens of our country.
Diane, thanks for the call. Mike, it sounds like we're already doing that.
Well, I should say the radioactive, the low-level radioactivity, the water that they're shipping, I don't think that's going to Texas. I think at one point that was going to a landfill, a disposal facility in Tennessee. But in terms of waste control specialists, the partner in the decommissioning, yeah, their facility is in Andrews, Texas. And I'll have to admit, I don't know much about the circumstances and, you know, how that facility is situated in Texas.
I see a reporting trip in your future.
Sure.
Jim is calling in from Hinesburg. Hi, Jim. Go right ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm out on 91 hilltopping here, so hopefully you don't lose me. But my concern is a downside one. I don't know North Star. I do know that Energy has a number of power production plants and revenue streams associated with them. What happens if North Star decides there's no profit to be had here and simply files for bankruptcy, either as a whole entity or a smaller operating company doing this site in Vermont, leaving Vermont holding the bag? And corollary to that, I think I heard Mike say that the trust fund was at $500 million about, and the other gentleman said that the estimate that Entergy had was it was going to be close to $1.25 billion to remediate. Big gap, it seems to me.
Yeah, Jim, thanks for the calls. And that's right. Entergy had said more than $1 billion. But, you know, Raymond Chattis was telling us that his organization had thought it could be done for maybe a little more than half that. And the current rate, the current amount in that decommissioning fund is about $575 million. Mike, a couple questions there from Jim. One is the financial viability of North Star, and then that question of how much it is actually going to cost, which I guess we just don't know yet.
Yeah, we don't. And I should point out, too, that the trust fund numbers can be deceiving because, you know, Entergy for the past year and a half plus has been spending from the trust fund. In fact, they've spent, I believe, about $57 million from it just this year. So you can't really look at $575 million in the trust fund now and then compare that to $1.24 billion because we're already partway down that path. Yeah, the numbers are really kind of fluid, and we'll have to see what North Star says. As far as the financial assurance, we don't have absolute assurance with any company, Entergy, North Star, that they can or will do the job. I mean, that is supposed to be the regulatory purview of the NRC. It's the NRC that says, yep, we believe you have the financial ability to do this. And I should also note that the NRC monitors the trust fund and requires license holders, which North Star will be once the sale is complete, to make up the difference financially if it feels that the fund has fallen too far behind. But, you know, there's no 100% guarantee with any of these companies.
Chris Recchia said cautious optimism was probably the right way to phrase how he's feeling. Ray Chattis said, you know, basically, this sounds like a good thing if all assurances are in place. Mike, what have you been hearing from Vernon and surrounding communities about the basically just regular people's reaction to this sale idea?
Yeah, I think there's some optimism also in Vernon. There's some hope that some portion of that land can be reused. You know, as nuclear plants go, it's a relatively small site. It's about 125 acres. And as someone else pointed out, the spent fuel is going to remain on site. So it's not like all 125 acres will be available. But some portion of that presumably will be after North Star completes its decommissioning. And if that can be if that land can be available in 2030 or 2031 as opposed to 2075, you know, that's cause for some optimism in Vernon. Earlier this year, the town looked at the possibility of a natural gas plant on you know, somewhere near Yankee, And that would have only required, I think, 20 or 30 acres. So there is some potential there, I think, for redevelopment.
Well, we'll continue to read your reporting and see what you uncover as you follow this story. Mike Fayer writes for VT Digger and for the Brattleboro-based weekly The Commons. Thanks very much for talking with us about this proposed sale of Vermont Yankee.
Thanks a lot.
Coming up, we'll take a look at a new study done by UVM researchers that finds troubling racial bias in access to mental health professionals. You're listening to Vermont Edition. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Studies in recent years have shown that there is a racial bias against people of color or a perception that someone is not white in rental housing, in academia, and in other areas. A new study conducted by researchers at the University of Vermont now shows there's a disturbing prevalence of racial bias in mental health services as well. Here to talk about what this study found is Lance Smith, associate professor in counseling at the university and the study's lead researcher. Lance, welcome to the program.
It is a pleasure to have this conversation with you today, Jane. Thanks.
I understand to do this study, you had an actor call and leave a voicemail at the offices of mental health counselors and psychologists saying she was seeking services. In some cases, she said her name was Allison. In others, she said her name was Lakeisha. And you chose those two names because of their perceived association with people of specific races?
That is correct. We pulled randomly phone numbers from a number of therapists on an internet database, and then we had our actor record a message, and we left this message on their voice boxes, in their voice boxes, and everything about the message for every therapist was exactly the same. It was the same voice, it was the same person, and they were asking for the same services. Basically, it was, I need counseling, and will you give me a call back? The only difference was for half of the therapists, the person in the message identified as Allison, and for the other half, the person identified as Lakeisha.
And the idea here was that the therapists might associate Allison with somebody who was white. Obviously, they couldn't see her, and they might associate Lakeisha as a name more closely associated with black people.
Exactly. It's been pretty well documented that Allison is a very popular name for women and girls in families that identify as white, and Lakeisha is a popular name for women and girls in families that identify as black or African American.
And what did you find about the response rate?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you that, Jane. What do you think we found?
Well, I've read the summary, so I know that what was interesting was that on first blush, the response rate was very similar, whether it was Allison or Lakeisha, but you dug deeper than that.
Yeah. So I'm going to complicate this a little bit. I don't know about your listeners, but it's not easy. It's not always easy to call a therapist and to find a therapist who will actually invite you into their door, right? So when we're making phone calls to therapists and we're leaving voicemails, there are two things that need to happen in order for us to have access to services. One, the therapist needs to call us back. And then two, the therapist needs to communicate that they have an open schedule and let's talk about some time in the future when we might be able to go in and see them. So what we noticed is that with regards to that first step, actually receiving a phone call back, Allison did receive more return phone calls than Lakeisha did. And then when we added the other condition of not only do we need to receive a phone call, but we also need to hear a message asking Allison and or Lakeisha to follow up or inviting Allison or Lakeisha to their offices for an appointment, we noticed that Lakeisha was more likely to receive a message to the extent of, I'm sorry, I wish I could take you, but my caseload is full. So when we were thinking about what are responses that promote services and what are responses that impede services, what we found was a statistically significant relationship around bias in that Lakeisha was more likely to have responses that impeded services than was Allison.
Because one of the things I didn't realize was that therapists and providers are supposed to call you back. So they should be calling back at the very least. And then the question was, what did they say? Did they offer services or did they say, you know, my practice is all full?
Yeah, one of the more surprising findings of our study is therapists have an ethical mandate to return phone calls to potential clients. And we found that many therapists didn't even call our clients back. As a matter of fact, there's another researcher out of Princeton who, unbeknownst to us, was conducting a similar study at virtually the same time. Her study came out this summer. Ours came out this fall. And she also found, to her surprise, that there were many, many therapists who didn't call clients back at all. But moreover, she had her study had similar results to ours, in that the white middle class clients or actors in her study were twice as likely to receive services than were people in her study that identified as black and middle class.
I'm talking with Lance Smith. He's an associate professor in counseling at the University of Vermont and the co-lead investigator on a new study showing racial bias among mental health care providers. Professor Smith, did you screen for or have any way of measuring the race of the provider?
Yeah, that is a very good question. And no, we did not. And that was primarily out of ethical concerns for our participants. We in no way wanted our participants to be able to be identified. But at the same time, we weren't and are not necessarily concerned about the racial identity of the provider, because we are looking at a larger system, right? We're looking at how counselors en masse may or may not contribute to this disparity in mental health access. This is similar to a study that was conducted years ago. Some of your listeners may be familiar with this, where researchers responded to 5,000 want ads in Chicago and Boston, and they sent multiple resumes to each want ad, and the resumes were exactly the same in terms of education, in terms of experience. The only difference was the name at the top of the resume. Was it Greg or was it Jamal? Was it Allison or was it Lakeisha? And what they found was that resumes with a white-sounding name received a 50% higher callback. So in that study as well, they were not able to ascertain the racial identity of the human resource officer or whoever it was that reviewed those resumes, but what they could see, as we did find, was that there's a systemic discussion that needs to be had around racial bias.
Well, yeah, I mean, given that other studies in different arenas, whether it's housing or jobs or academia, have found similar racial biases, you know, perhaps it's sadly not a surprise to see a racial bias here, but what now? What do you want to happen for mental health care providers to do with this information?
Yeah, that might be the most important question of our phone call today. You know, the first thing we need to do is we need to have a discussion about racism, and we need to move away from this really dominant idea in our society that one is either racist, which we think of a mean-spirited, overtly KKK card-carrying bigot, right? One's either a racist or one is a good, beneficent, well-intended person and therefore not racist. And I would submit that most counselors and therapists and psychologists are very beneficent, well-meaning, well-intended people. The conversation we need to have is not if we are racist or not, but a conversation around how much bias has been downloaded into our software, because most of us have bias that's been downloaded into our lived software. And I'm not pointing my fingers at anyone in our study who perhaps did not call Lakeisha back or did not offer her services, because, Jane, that could have been me. I have implicit bias downloaded into my software as well. So we need to have this conversation. We also need to expand our research on implicit bias, specifically how to interrupt implicit bias. And some of the best research that we have speaks to the power of authentic and genuine relationships, interracial relationships, relationships with people that identify from a different cultural or racial background than I do. And when I mean authentic, I don't mean the token relationship. Yeah, I've got a black friend on my fantasy football team. Relationships where we know what their dinner table is like. They know what our dinner table is like. We laugh together. We cry together. We share stories about our kids together. If there's anything that is remotely promising about implicit racial bias, it's the development of genuine and authentic relationships.
Lance Smith is associate professor in counseling at the University of Vermont, and he was the co-lead researcher on a new study showing racial bias among mental health care providers against offering services to patients they may have perceived as black. Lance Smith, thank you very much for talking with us about your study. I appreciate it.
Yes, and thank you for having us on.
And that will do it for today's show. Now, T.J. Donovan will become Vermont's new attorney general in January after winning election easily last Tuesday. Tomorrow on the program, we'll hear from the new AG on his plans for the office. That's tomorrow in the noon hour here on VPR. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Singeri, Sam Gail Rosen, and Meg Malone. Mary Williams directed the show, and our executive producer is Patty Daniels. If you've missed any of our interviews and you want to go back and check them out, you can find everything at vpr.net. You can also subscribe to Vermont Edition as a podcast. Get it on your phone or your tablet every day. You'll never miss a beat. You can find it wherever you find your podcasts, or again, all of our episodes are at vpr.net. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.